Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of June. And first on today's episode, it's claimed significant changes to IVF provision in Kent have been brought in under the radar. You may or may well not know that from the start of April, the number of cycles offered on the NHS in the county has been cut from 2 to 1. While the upper age limit women can have treatment has been reduced from 40 to 38. Health papers due to be discussed by councillors this week suggest the change brings Kent in line with most other areas, but not everyone is happy. Earlier, I spoke to Green Party councillor for Maidstone, Stuart Jeffrey, who's also a former NHS director.
I found out when I read the Health Overview and Scrutiny papers last week that it's come out of the blue to us. Looking at the consultation they've done, a very small number of people responded. So clearly not a lot of engagement with the public. And frankly, this is a massive change. It has huge impacts upon people's lives. And they've tried to slip it under the radar.
Yeah, let's just outline the changes then. So for people who want to go through fertility treatment, effectively, they're cutting the number of rounds of IVF you can have from 2 to 1, also reducing the number of embryos that will be implanted, but also changing the age for women as well.
Yes, so it basically halves the amount of IVF and cuts out a few years of people's ability to access the IVF. And yes, clearly fertility as can be shown drops down once I think you get past 34, and tails off quite quickly. But it is a huge shift. And let's remember that whilst they're reducing this down to 1 from 2 cycles of IVF, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, NICE, recommends, or their guidelines say this should be 3 cycles. So it was already lower than the NICE recommends, and now it's going to be even worse.
However, they're arguing that we're coming in line with other NHS areas around the country. But I mean, you're really not happy about this, are you? Because you didn't know about it. Are you going to try and fight this change, even though it has already come into force?
Yeah, I mean, just because other areas of the country are doing something similar doesn't make it right. When I was in the NHS 7 years ago, I led a very similar review. Our respondent rate was 7 times higher than the NHS now. And we concluded that it was the wrong thing to do. So we kept it at 2 cycles. Now, nothing has changed fundamentally from 2019 to 2026. The issues are still the same. So it is absolutely the wrong thing to do and will cause misery for hundreds, if not thousands of people, potentially across Kent. So, yes, I will be fighting this, and I'll be asking for the committee, the Overview and Scrutiny Committee, to write to the Secretary of State to say you need to intervene here.
I'm guessing for couples who are trying for a baby, it's already an incredibly stressful time if that's not happening naturally, and then even more stressful to go through IVF and then just to be told you've got 1 shot. I mean, I can't imagine how that would make you feel. I mean, puts a huge amount of pressure on, doesn't it? Especially for the woman who must just feel awful if that is not successful.
Yeah, and one of the things that I discovered when I ran this review many years ago was that the stress of trying to get pregnant and the stress of life generally was a massive barrier to getting pregnant. I was encouraging the NHS at that time to put in support for women to reduce stress levels, because actually that would help women get pregnant and save a lot of money from the NHS as a result. I don't believe that ever happened. I think COVID hit and things got a bit messy. But clearly it is very stressful, and increasing the stress on women will make the procedure less likely to be effective. I mean, I cannot begin to imagine how distressing this will be for women in particular.
Now, the NHS has admitted a scrutiny committee should have been told about the changes before they were introduced. Maybe you're starting off on an IVF journey. You can let us know what you think about the changes by leaving a comment on the story or indeed via our socials.
Kent Online News.
Elsewhere today, details have emerged of how a Kent mum died after being dragged along a country lane by a horse near Deal. Eva Larson was out with an experienced instructor when the horse she'd been riding was spooked by barking dogs in Sutton last August. The 59-year-old from Chilham suffered extensive injuries and died in hospital from an infection. An inquest is ongoing. A man who died in a crash involving an e-scooter and a fire engine in Dartford has been described as having the biggest smile and loudest laugh. Tommy Jarvis was taken to a London hospital following the collision on Darrenth Road late last Monday night. The 21-year-old had been travelling home from work. A hearing's been told a Met police officer from Kent told his girlfriend authorities wouldn't believe her abuse claims because he was in the force. Daniel Smith retired a day before misconduct proceedings took place but would have been sacked for gross misconduct. The 53-year-old former constable from the Tunbridge and Morling area denied controlling and coercive behaviour, but a panel found he breached standards. A man who racially abused and threatened a woman in Canterbury has been jailed. A court was told Joe Wilson targeted his victim as she walked along Military Road in January last year. The 21-year-old from Herne Bay Road in Surrey has been locked up for 2 years and 5 months. Now, a dad who lives near Maidstone has been telling us about the impact of ongoing water supply disruption. South East Water customers started experiencing problems 11 days ago, with the company blaming high demand during the recent heatwave. Well, Lucy's been chatting to Paul Ratcliffe from Lewes, who says it's something they've been dealing with for a very long time.
It's been going on for the last 3 or 4 years, so we sort of know the signs when pressure gets low and it starts to dribble. So last week it started to go intermittently, it would come back and then kind of go all together. Yeah, it's been sort of over a week. It's most of the days it's off fully, so you just get nothing. It's then coming back limited overnight, so it kind of fills toilet systems and things overnight. Obviously you're asleep, and then when you wake up in the morning there's either tiny bit of water or nothing again. And yeah, specifically over the weekend, and then this morning there's just absolutely nothing. So it's all day every day.
Oh my goodness, what sort of impact is that having on you, and have you got family there with you as well?
Yeah, so I've got two young daughters, a 12-year-old and an 8-year-old. For us it's just the basic things, like flushing toilets, having showers, washing up, just getting drinks. So kind of for the first couple of days you work around it, but it gradually, as the time goes on and it's again and again, it really does have kind of a real mental effect as well as physical. It's just exhausting, having to remind the children not to flush the toilet or to go there, or if they need a drink, when to get one and how to get one, and not able to give them that. They went back to school this morning after half term and not able to wash uniforms properly or kind of make sure stuff was done. Not able to have a bath or a shower last night. So it's just the real basic practicalities that you take for granted has just been taken away, and it's just really difficult and it's just exhausting.
Yeah, and of course this is being blamed on the hot weather and high demand. Do you think that's a good reason for this disruption?
No. I completely understand that. I think it's laughable though, because I mean, as I say, we live in Leonard Goldway, which is a specific part of Lewes. We've experienced this for the last 3 or 4 years. It's always a very specific area. So the other side of the Lewes Road has water. So it's obviously a particular part of the system. For the last few years, it's been blamed on a specific pumping station and booster station down the road, which was having technical faults. They were supposed to have upgraded it. Goodness knows if they did or not. Completely understand that there's been a hot week, but everyone else in Maidstone has got water. I appreciate kind of across Kent, there's been lots of outages. So it's not just us, it's not isolated. But if it's purely down to demand, surely that would be widespread. It would be everybody would be in the same boat, not these really isolated issues. Also, just the lack of information you get. It's just really generic, absolute meaningless updates that apologise profusely, but actually don't give you any information, clearly don't mean it. And it's just, there's nothing. If they said it's going to go off at this time and it will come back at that time for these reasons, that would actually be better because you'd know. It's just the not knowing and it just feels like being fobbed off, basically.
We've also managed to sit down with South East Water's head of water resources for an update and explanation on the issue. Nick Price has been telling Lucy about plans to prevent future disruption.
So we obviously have seen a heat wave. We've seen the highest temperature ever recorded in May. We have that high temperature obviously causes the demand for water to shoot up, which is why we've been appealing to our customers to think very carefully about their water use. Our water resource availability is good for the time of year, but the high demand makes it challenging for us to treat and transfer that water from our sources of water through to the customer. So we are obviously appealing to people just to try and use water for essential use only. We are really sorry to customers who have had interruptions or suffered low pressure. And if we can all do our bit by trying to reduce demand, everyone should be back into supply as soon as possible.
Last time there were problems in the Tunbridge Wells area, it was the cold weather that was to blame. Now it's the hot weather. I mean, a lot of customers are quite frustrated by this, that there always seems to be an excuse.
Yeah, we absolutely recognise that this interruption is, again, kind of unacceptable, really, after the earlier incidents in Tunbridge Wells and that occurred over the winter due to other reasons. Obviously, because of climate change, we are starting to see more intense, you know, weather extremes occurring. We are also, as a company, in recognition of this, investing more money over the next few years than we've ever invested before, £2.1 billion to improve our resilience to the effects of climate change, and obviously also to make sure we have enough water for new houses as well. So we do face challenges as an industry, and we're investing to make sure there is sufficient water for everyone into the future.
I spoke to a man this morning who lives in Lewes, which is near Maidstone, and he said it's been a problem. They've had intermittent supply since Saturday before this one just gone, so about 10 days now, and he said it's been happening quite regularly for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, every time there's a problem, they lose water supply, or it's kind of on and off. He's been unable to wash his daughter's school uniform for returning to school after half term, you know, unable to have showers. I mean, this is having a huge impact on people, and it's something that's kind of been going on for quite a long time now.
Yeah, again, we'd like to apologise to that person and obviously everyone that's been affected. Our staff are working round the clock at the moment to make sure that we are keeping our treated water reservoirs topped up. We're using tankers. We've obviously had some bottled water stations open as well so that people can go and collect water. Or if customers are vulnerable and are on our priority services register, they are able to sign up, and we will then deliver water to households so that they have those essential water for those essential needs. So once again, I can only apologise for the interruptions that have occurred, and we are working as hard as we can to make sure everyone is back into supply. Longer term, as I said, we're investing £2.1 billion over the next few years to try and improve the service that we provide customers to make sure that we don't have outages like this occur as a result of extreme weather.
At the time of recording today's podcast, the latest update from South East Water was that more than 2,000 customers in Kent were still experiencing intermittent supply. And the Ashford MP insists the government will continue to hold water bosses in Kent to account following all of these outages. So Jan Joseph has been speaking to us from Westminster.
Yes, we are getting that reassurance. I accept their apologies, but this is a long-term, lack of long-term investment for many, many years. So this need to happen as soon as possible. And this kind of chaos should not happen again. As we know, I had to raise an issue back in February to end hosepipe ban. So the hosepipe ban was in place during the winter months all the way to February. And here we are in May. When the demand goes up, we don't have enough water. And there was no contingency plan in place, even though we knew that this hot weather was coming. So there should have been more planning in place.
And as you say, it was only a couple of days. We've still got the entire summer ahead. What do you want to hear from bosses in the next few weeks to reassure you that we're not going to have a major problem throughout the summer?
So I would like to hear from them that what are the short-term investment and long-term investment that's going to help the whole Southeast region. It's not just my constituency's issue. We know that this issue is affecting wider Kent area. So I would love to hear from them that what is the short-term investment and what's the long-term investment. And they probably need to be open and transparent. People were telling me was they were not able to get hold of them. They need to improve their communication. So if we are a bit more open and transparent, then maybe that will reassure the people a bit more.
Kent Online reports.
A fire has broken out at a business in Sheerness after embers from a brazier spread to fences and a bin. Crews were called to tackle the blaze at Seaside Avenue yesterday afternoon. They're reminding us to make sure outdoor fires are kept away from anything that could catch a light. There are calls for Snodland to rejoin a scheme tackling antisocial behaviour after a man was abused by a gang of around 20 children. Police are investigating after it happened outside the BP garage at Holborough Lakes last Wednesday. The town was previously part of a safer neighbourhood scheme where uniformed officers patrolled the area and reported any issues. Council bosses say the results didn't justify the cost, though. Now, Kent's biggest school faces a forced takeover by another operator if its current Academy Trust can't sort out its finances. The government's issued Tenterden Schools Trust with what's known as a Notice to Improve warning. It runs Homewood School in Tenterden, alongside four primary schools and two nurseries. Bosses at a Medway church involved in a planning row have admitted they never intended to break any rules. The Ona Iwa Mimo Cherubim and Seraphim Church of Nigeria Mountain of Joy opened in a former newsagent on Luton High Street in February. They hadn't received planning permission for the building's change of use and have subsequently put in an application. It's currently being considered by council bosses. Next, and a group that works with young families in Folkestone has been telling us about some of the pressures parents are facing as they appeal for more volunteers. Homestart Shepway says issues including screen time, diet and the cost of living crisis can leave people struggling. Lucy's been speaking to Ali, who's a project coordinator and CEO Sam O'Connor.
So our volunteers come to us from anyone who's got parenting or sibling experience, you know, working with families, and they can come to us. We train them to do one-to-one home visiting. They can work in our groups, so they can do facilitation, but it's about emotional and practical support for families. So it's for parents with children under eight. We've been going since 1995, so we've had lots of experience of you know, what families need and want and how to best support them. But yes, our trained volunteers will go out and do that piece of work. We've got some support workers as well, so for our more complex families. So we do have some paid staff as well, and we have our coordinators who coordinate the and train and support the volunteers. But our volunteers are key to our service, really. They're the ones that keep us going and keep us out there, and they're the ones that have got the experience and knowledge to work with those families. And I think a lot of the time people don't realise the skills they've got by bringing up children, that they can actually use that as a life skill that is really, really important to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the 30 years since Homestart Shepway was set up, what's kind of changed in terms of support and maybe pressure on families and parents? I don't know if, Sam, you might be best to answer that one, seeing as you're sort of there from the start.
Yeah, I mean, one of the key issues is obviously post-COVID, and we're still feeling the impacts of that now for the children that are going to the school. So initially it was babies within isolation, and now we've got children that are going into school that haven't had those social skills. So that's been a real issue for families. So school readiness has always been a key factor of the work that we do. But a lot of our work is around emotional and practical support. So it's about being there for families, early days of, you know, sort of being new parents or multiple births, and just have that little bit of, you know, sort of support there, somebody with you, working with you, alongside you, supporting you, giving you ideas, giving you different tactics to use. We have a lot of resources and training that we can access as well for families, especially around behaviours. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, parents have that things have changed dramatically since I've been doing it, you know, around screen time, you know, sort of play, stimulation, getting children out and about, using their community. So that's always been a core baseline of our work. However, I do think the cost of living currently is impacting families and causing additional pressures, and it's causing a lot of conflict within families. And I think just parenting in general, it's a tough job, whichever year you're in, you know, from year one to year 30, parents, it's not something you're taught. So, you know, if you haven't got, if you've moved here, if you've worked, moved for you know, sort of haven't got any families or friends, you know, Home Start Volunteer is there to take you out, to have you access the community, to find groups, to find local support, and just give you that sort of extra helping hand, really.
Yeah, that's fantastic. A support network is so important, as you say, especially for people who might not have friends and family in the area. So coming on to you, Ali, if I could just get you to kind of tell me a bit about, obviously Sam mentioned some of the pressure that's on families. You know, screen time is such a big thing now. Diet, you know, neurodivergency, that kind of thing. Is that something a lot of parents you find are struggling with?
They're struggling with it immensely. I think neurodivergent parents have a huge job to do. We offer behaviour support. We have a family lead who can go out and support the families. We did a few workshops here that were very successful, and we're now taking those into schools to give parents the confidence to parent. Neurodivergence is huge in our family.
It's very, very high.
Very high. So we just try to support the parents as much as we can to be the best parents that they can.
We can do that in a one-to-one situation in the home or in a group setting. So I think that's the nice thing about Home Start and the work that we do, that we can cater for both.
Kent Online reports.
Some important travel news for you now. And roadworks in part of Ashford are set to cause disruption for another fortnight after contractors were impacted by engineering difficulties. Gas company SGN has been carrying out network upgrades on New Street since April the 7th. The second phase was due to finish this Friday, but it's now been delayed for 2 weeks. Elsewhere, road workers have been criticised after being spotted filling in a pothole on a road in Kent during pouring rain. Contractors carried out repairs on the high street in Lenham before the recent heatwave, despite the hole being filled with water. Well, Kent County Council say the works weren't fully completed due to the weather and the crew will return. Lidl's been given permission to build a new store in Ramsgate, as long as they pay £80,000 to rehome some lizards. There's a record of reptiles living on the site on Manston Road near Tesco. Bosses at the budget chain have agreed to fund improvements at Pegwell Bay Country Park to give the common lizards a new home. And finally, an historic building that was previously home to Folkestone Library has been sold for just £1. The Grace Hill site closed in December 2022 after falling into disrepair. Folkestone Town Council has now bought it after agreeing a deal with bosses at KCC. It's hoped it'll be turned into a cultural and creative hub.
Kent Online Sports.
Football and former Gillingham midfielder Ewan Williams has signed for National League South side Dover Athletic. The 23-year-old was one of 14 senior players to leave the Gills at the end of last season as boss Gareth Ainsworth oversees a major overhaul. The club has wished him all the best. And Maidstone United captain Sam Corn has left the club after 7 years. The midfielders played 236 games and scored 33 goals since joining in 2019. He's now signed a new contract with local rivals Tunbridge Angels. Finally, a Kent Paralympian is planning to scale the O2 in a wheelchair to raise money for a charity that supports disabled children and young people. John Boy Smith was left paralysed after being shot in a case of mistaken identity when he was 16. He'll climb 365 metres in his wheelchair to the top of the iconic venue later this month as part of events to mark 30 years of We Are Beams. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on all of the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.